I'm here at Worcester Racecourse with John Morris, author, writer and professional backer. On the 26th year of your book, as far as if I'm correct there, John?
Yeah, 26 years I've been writing Jumping Prospects. It's been a labour of love at times, but I started off, I think it was 1992, and the first book I wrote, it was a success winners-wise, but I got slated by the Racing Post because the thing wasn't proved properly. So I learned a lesson on that one. The next one, again, wasn't perfect, but the winners were there. And then I went to magazines, six magazines I managed to complete, but unfortunately the distribution company who was in charge of the promotion and selling of the magazine went bust, costing me over £16,000 in lost revenue. And that would have scared anybody off in business. Myself, I was a single parent with two daughters at the time, and it was a bit daunting, but you know, I've never wanted to shy away from a battle. I've been battling the bookies all my life, I've been battling personal circumstances all my life, and it took me a little bit of time to recover, but I managed to get into things. Prior to that, just going back to my childhood in Liverpool, when I was at school, I used to like a bet, and I would stand outside betting shops in Liverpool, and I'd ask fellas to put the bets on for me. Now some of them won, and the fellas never gave me the money, which was a bit of a setback as well at times. But as I got older, I must have been about 14 when I first ventured into a betting shop. Now there was no gambling commission at the time, and it was an experience. Walking into them places at that time, compared to what they are now, were dens of iniquity. But they were full of characters, and it was my apprenticeship in a way, because I spoke to younger guys, probably a little bit older than myself in their 20s, but also the old stagers who probably remembered the runners, the time when they had runners on a corner in Scotty Road and places like that in Liverpool. It was hard going at times, but really enjoyed it. And I don't think younger punters realise how lucky they are, because in those days there were no pitchers in betting shops. They were smoke filled. I have chest infections now, probably due to my time in the betting shops. But I enjoyed every moment of it. You know, you learn things. Now, one thing they had in the betting shops them days, this is what I was coming around to, was the fact that they had the blower. Now, Extel would relay a commentary from the race course. And at times, the commentary in the closing stages would be longer than the race, particularly in the flat. It was the final furlong. And whoever was doing the commentary would like spin it out for as long as he possibly could to make the race sound really, really exciting. Now that went on for a number of years, but I think it was 1986 when SIS was born. And then that just transformed everything, because there were places, race courses, that had a mystique about them because they were never on terrestrial television. Places like Windsor, Fontwell the figure of eight, you know, unless you've been there, you didn't know what it was like. And all of a sudden, SIS burst onto the scene, and pitchers came along. Betting shops changed forever. Because don't forget as well, you had the board markers in betting shops, and those lads who marked the board had my admiration, because they didn't make mistakes, they got everything right, they remembered to write the favourites down, the boards were marked up brilliantly. It was absolutely fantastic. But when SIS came in, and you had the screens as well, relaying the prices, everything started to change. Whether or not it was for the better, I'm not sure, but I've got fond memories of those days with the Extel, but even fonder memories of what went on when the racing was just starting to be covered by the SIS on the televisions. That was great. My own history of going racing myself, I remember going with an uncle of mine who passed away a number of years ago, and he took me to Aintree, my local course. I only live a few miles now from Aintree, and the year I went, I told the teachers in school to be on this horse for the Grand National. I said, it's run twice around the course, it hasn't quite done anything as yet, but it was trained by Toby Balding in 1969. and it was called Highland Wedding. I've been on YouTube and I've had a look at the Highland Wedding race, and what struck me about it was that they said the ground was fast. It wasn't good, it was fast, quick ground. And when the horses went round, they were going, because what happened was, the footage of those days was not brilliant, should we say, but the horses themselves were jumping brilliantly. And the first faller, I think, came around about the fourth fence in the race. And by the time when the field got round past the stands, the Aintree stands, and don't forget, the old county stand's still there. That's what it was like in them days. It was packed. But the whole of the field, virtually, was still on its feet and still going around, still jumping brilliantly. By the time when they got down to the open ditch the second time round, down on the way down to Beaches, it spread out a little bit, the field. But they were still going well. And I think he took it up, Highland Wedding, who was a 12-year-old at the time, took it up at the canal turn, just jumping the canal turn. But he was definitely in the lead coming to Valentine's. And he went on and won in convincing style. Now, the reason why I tell that story is that Toby Balding became an idol of mine at that time. And he, later in life, was one of the trainers who I interviewed for Jumping Prospects. And when I turned up at Weyhill one day for the first time, I was late. And I put my head around the door looking for Toby and didn't recognise him. I just said, looking for Toby Balding. And he goes, "You're late, where have you been?" He had a right go at me. I said, "Right, I've got the sandwiches, come on, let's go, we're just retiring back to the cottage." And that interview was supposed to last about an hour and a half. I left there around about 5:30, 6 o'clock at night. It was absolutely worth its weight in gold. And when he got his OBE just before he started, he died, I should say, he sent me a little note because I'd sent him a congratulatory letter. And he sent one back to me, and I've still got it at home. And a few years later, he died, unfortunately. But he had a full life, and he was an absolute gentleman. He had a reputation, we all know that. But as a guy who I've met during my time doing Jumping Prospects, he was absolutely brilliant.
Okay, John, you've made your love also a career, but with the writing and the punting. What is your specific approach for anybody watching when it comes to backing horses successfully?
Well, the first thing you've got to do is damage limitation. That's always been my policy. So I do like to cover my bets, particularly if I've got a strongly fancied one and it might be a big price. And I back some big price winners on my time. But I do like to cover the bet wherever possible. It's just a case of being patient as well. I've been in betting shops when I was younger and fellas used to do, you know, on the football, they do 20 matches, and the horses, they could do 10 on doubles and trebles and all sorts, and they're always looking for the big win with their 10 pence bets. But really, you're not really going to get that. Having said that, I think I did a 20 pence yank, it would be about, what, 78, something like that, maybe a little bit later, probably 1980. And at the time I was working in St. Helens in Liverpool for Triplex, and or St. Helens in Merseyside, and I put this bet on a Friday afternoon, and the video recorders had just come out, and I got the whites to take the racing for me. And when I got back, I watched it, and there were four horses in it, obviously it would have been a yank. And the first one won, good price. Second one won 9-2. Third one won, good price. Fourth one won, good price. Now, you got to remember, in them days I was probably picking up around about £600-700 a month working for another company. The bet alone paid £900, and I went into Liverpool to pick the money up, and I ended up going around three of one of the biggest bookmakers in the country's shops trying to get the money out of them during the morning. But that's just the sort of thing that can happen to you when you're young in the game, as I was. But there have been some really interesting horses that I've backed over the years. There was a trainer by me in Lydiot called Mike O'Neill, and he had a number of very good horses at the time, and was responsible for bringing Jimmy Fortune from Ireland to ride for him on the flat. But he also trained over jumps Mick Meagher, who's now the racing manager for Trevor Hemmings. He was the assistant trainer there, and they trained a horse called Precious Boy, who won the, I think it was the Imperial Cup first time at 16-1, and then next time I was 50-1. I managed to get the prices for them, for both of them. He'd had a bit of an injury, there was a bit of a gap, I think it was 1991 and 1994 when this horse won. That was one of the biggest thrills I've ever had because it was locally trained. I used to go down to the gallops during the winter and early spring and watch what was going on down there, stand on the hill. It was only me doing it. And there was a horse being readied for Chester. I think it was called, off the top of my head, Admiralty Way. No, this ran at Chester over 7 furlongs, I think it was. No, it was further. It was 1¼ mile. Pretty certain it was something like that anyhow. And it was on Channel 4. In the morning, I'd gone round and got the 33-1 for it that was knocking around in a few different shops. I had, for me, a fairly big bet at the time. And I always remember, I think it was Rory Gilbert on Channel 4 who was commentating. And he came round into the home straight, and his famous quote, which really sticks in my mind, is this is supposed to be a handicap. The horse was 18 lengths clear, something like that, going into the final furlong, and it romped home. Now, the sequel to that race was that earlier, the week before, I'd actually had somebody crash into the side of the car, and I couldn't get out of the driver's side. I used to have to clamber over into the passenger side and get out of the car. And you won't guess what happened that evening when I got out in the middle of town. The betting slips all out of my pocket, and they were worth about £8,000, maybe more. So I was absolutely mortified, but fortunately I managed to get to two of the shops that had the biggest proportion of the bets, and the girls there said they would never have paid anybody else other than me. But it took me a week to get the money because they had to send the film away to get processed and then everything checked and the money was ready for me. But that was a nice feeling, that one. I really enjoyed that. Punting wise, over the years, another horse in that yard that went in was Joveworth for 50-1 for the Air Gold Cup. I remember watching that on a Saturday morning, doing its work, going to its paces about a week before it was due to run in the Air Gold Cup, which I think at that time used to be run on a Friday. And it romped it, quite frankly. You could have called it the winner at halfway, as far as I was concerned. Went in 50-1 for that. I thought, that's good. Well, they're the positive ones. What about the negatives? And there's been a lot of negatives, believe me. You've got to have really broad shoulders to be in the game as long as I have without having disappointments. And I've had a lot of disappointments. I'm not going to name them, you know, for any embarrassment, because there were a few that, in a way, hurt me a lot. But you learn to wipe your mouth, walk away, and start again. And that's the problem that a lot of people have. They can't accept losing bets, they can't accept losing runs. So that's one of the things that you've got to remember. As I said, by 1992 I was writing the book. I've formed relationships over the past 26 years with trainers. I've interviewed 125 trainers now, different trainers, throughout those 26 years. Some of them have been in the book since the start, others haven't. It's never plain sailing in this game, but recently I've had an awful lot of success at Cheltenham. I enjoy my racing at Cheltenham and Aintree, and I like to go for value wherever possible. The game's changed a little bit, but I'm hopeful that things will keep going for me.
John, in those 26 years, you've done a lot of interviews. What's the strangest sort of place or belated or whatever you've had to do to sort of finish things up?
Well, there was a new trainer to Britain I was chasing, and I thought he would definitely be one to watch, and his name was Noel Chance, and I couldn't get hold of him. Every time I phoned, he was never there, or he never came back to me. So I was in Lambourne one night, and it was about 10 o'clock at night, and the phone box was there, just before we had mobile phones. So I thought, I'm going to give him one last go. So I actually phoned his house about, it was about 10 o'clock at night. I said, look, I'm in Lambourne, can I come and see you tomorrow? And the reply was, if you've got nobody better to interview, yes, come along. So I walked into the yard and we talked about the horses, and we went into the box, and it was a big box, and there was this horse stood in the corner. And he gave me the eye, the look, the white eye that horses sometimes have when they're stood in their boxes. And I thought, I know this horse from somewhere. I've seen him before. He was very recognisable, do you know what I mean? He was a big, big fella. And I said to Noel, so who's this? He said, oh, this is a horse called Mr. Mulligan. I said, oh, I remember this one running at Newbury. And he was a fence clear when he was trained by Kim Bailey. And he came down, I think. He said, yeah. He said, he's over that now. He said, these are lovely horses, you can see. He said, I'm going to start them off over the hurdles and then we'll go fencing with them. Anyway, he won first time out, I think it was Utoxeter. And then he won the Son of Lions and went on and won the Gold Cup as well. So, just a chance phone call. And I got to know not only Noel Chance, but also Mr. Mulligan, who was a horse who I had at the back of my mind following that unique run at Newbury. And thought, well, I'll definitely follow this horse through his career, and he won the Gold Cup. So that was a good day. So I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed picking him up. There's been other trainers talking about Kim Bailey. Kim Bailey's always been good with me. I used to see. I remember when he used to train in Lambourne, and then he went not far from the M40. I've forgotten the place now. He trained around there, and then he moved to where he is now. But he's always one that I can call up and go and see him. Takes me on the gallops every time I go there. Real good guy to interview, nice fella. And also Alan King's one of my favourites, because same routine every year. Arrive there about 8:45 in the morning, go into the ring, pre-riding ring. He shouts out his orders, or he barks out his orders to the staff, telling them where he wants them to go, what he wants them to do. Then it's up onto the gallops. And at that time of the year, they're only doing little canters, you know, just breeze-ups. And Alan's fantastic. He's pointed me in the right direction of many a winner for his section of the book. I think we've had one fallout in the 20-odd years I've been going to see him. So that's a real interesting one. There was one trainer who I got into a little bit of trouble with, because I interviewed him for 2 consecutive years and he hadn't done anything. And doing the interview, and it started off, and I said, well, I thought I'd better come, because I said, you can't be this bad, so I've got to give you the third chance. And he had a few winners after that. I'm not going to tell you who it was, I'm not going to embarrass the guy, but he collared me at Bangor on day, pulled me by the shoulder, pulled me back and said, see, I can train winners, can't I? Having just had a winner a few minutes earlier at Bangor. Another one who a lot of respect for is a good friend of mine, Robert Olney. Robert's, as you know, had a terrible accident. Must be quite a few years ago now. But whenever I can, and I go to see him if I'm down south on the tour, he's really good to me. I remember him calling me at Bangor on Dee, and there were a couple of horses that we failed to talk about in the interview. And he said, look, this one you've got to put in, the Dorset trains him. This one's okay, watch for this coming out. This one, I know you like a bet. He said, you might want a few bob on this one. The horse was called Master Medic, and it won first time out at Folkestone, 50-1. I mean, again, a chance meeting, literally. But shortly after that, unfortunately, Robin's experienced his accident, which paralysed him for, you know, the remainder of his life. But he was an absolute gentleman. Sally, his wife, enjoyed us coming down. And hopefully, you know, he's okay at the moment. So you're watching this, Robert, hope you're fine. I know you've got a copy of this year's book. And try and get to you next year. Paul Nichols was another one I've been to see virtually every year that he's trained. When I first went there, he was just starting. He hadn't actually won the championship, because Martin Pipe was keeping him on the periphery. Although he was getting better and better every year. I think he only had about 40 horses the first time I went to see him. And I've been there every year. I go, sometimes it's a quick interview, other times it's been a bit longer. It just depends how busy he is. This year the interview was with Harry Dereham, and it was an entertaining afternoon, and also an entertaining write-up, which we disagreed over a little bit, but you know, that sort of things happens. I always send the trainers what I've written, and hopefully they'll be able to decide if there's anything that, you know, the owner might not want to say in there or might not come across too well. And I'm always open to them saying, look, let's change that. And hopefully that's what will happen. Who else have we got? I just enjoy going around stables that are a little bit under the radar. There's one or two over the years. I mean, I used to always go in Lambert, call in to see Ben DeHaan. He'd only have 10 or 12 horses, but Grand National winning jockey.
Have you had any particular ones that have point blank refused to have you
sneak? Oh yeah. There's quite a few actually. And it does disappoint me because I'm trying to promote the game. They get to see what's written. I've got one trainer who told me he didn't wish to participate. And he's well known because he lost a horse when he did an interview with the Racing Post one time. There've been a few others that say no. One lady trainer in particular, just the secretary said yes, and a few minutes later the secretary phoned me back and she said no, you can't come. So just point blank. But the majority of them, fantastic. You know, you go there and first time they might be a little bit cagey with you. But once they get to know me a bit and they know I've got the enthusiasm for the game, I love talking to the trainers, I love looking at the horses when I'm there. And don't forget, I'm travelling at one stage. The furthest I did one year was over 2,000 miles because I was down south into South Wales, up north into Scotland, and it was clocked over 2,000 miles. And there was one incident. I went to see Lucinda and Peter Scudamore, and Peter said, don't go back this way, go back over one of the bridges. So the sat nav wasn't registering that the roundabouts had gone, and it was just a straight road leading up to the bridge. And I got onto the bridge, and they'd only gone about, what, 25 meters or something like that on the bridge, and the sat nav lady turned around and said, take the next left in 100 yards. I'm on a bridge, you're not doing that. The exchanges, I've tried the exchanges myself and I don't honestly think they're working for me. I've come off course a lot compared to the travelling I used to do, say, 5-10 years ago. And I'm office based at home for a lot of the time. I like the local courses, Haydock, Aintree, Bangor. I used to like Chester, but you can't see anything. I mean, I'm fortunate, at least I can get up into the stands and see the racing, but I'm not a great lover of Chester. But I used to love Haydock. I've had some great results at Haydock. Even last season is a funny one for you. Last season there was a race that was running in the fog. I don't know if you remember it. And the horse that eventually won it was trained by Evan Williams. Now, what happened there was that on the far side, this horse, which was called Klein, also in the book, he went down on his nose, barged into the running rail because obviously he was in the fog, got disorientated, and he was practically down on his nose. Now, he must have been, he couldn't see, so it's hearsay what I'm being told. He must have been about 10 or 15 lengths behind the ones that were in the lead, and he's got so much guts and determination, the horse, he forced his way back. And it was so bad, the fog at Haydock Park, and I was in the press room, you could not see the winning post from the press room. And we're directly in line with it there. You just couldn't make out the shape of it or anything like that. And all you saw was the silhouettes of the horses going past. And I thought one of them was the horse at a back climb. So on the way to the winner's enclosure, just to check to see if he'd managed to get placed, the announcement came over that he'd actually won the race. I was just amazed. I don't think the race should ever have been run in those conditions, and I don't think they will take a chance like that again in the future. But it was just it was one of the euphoric moments in my betting career, that one. I didn't win an awful lot, but I just absolutely loved the feel of a horse coming through the fog. I didn't even get to see him finish from. No one knew what had happened out in the country, and Evan Williams kindly told me that that's what happened to him. He's one to keep an eye on this season over fences as well. But I think the ring has changed an awful lot. I think some of the bookmakers are on course are not as good as their predecessors, in that their public relations are not very good. I think that at one stage the each way terms were diabolical and they were pushing them out. but a lot of bookmakers now have changed this on course, and it does look to be getting an awful lot better. I've got, I know quite a lot of Northern bookies, and I think there's only two or three of them of what I call old school. They do give a very good service to their punters. There are still a few I feel that could learn to be a bit nicer to their customers than what they are. And I'm not going to name names or anything like that, but my own experience of watching how they deal with people and also watching the reaction of punters is, you know, I've actually had a word with a couple of them and said, look, you know, you can't really do that to a punter. They mightn't understand the situation. I mean, one bookmaker, I put the wrong horse on one day, which is very, very rare. It happened. And I went back and I said, look, I backed the wrong horse. And he just said, oh, here, have your money back. You know, there was no, we'll change it for you. You know, it was a genuine mistake. The guy didn't really know me, but the bookies either side of him did. And I just got my money flung back at me, and I thought, that's not customer care. And you've got to be careful how you treat people, because it'll bounce back on you one day.
Okay, John, 26 years of writing this book, Jumping Prospects. Tell us all about this seasons and what can it do for you if you buy it?
Well, this is the copy of the book, Jumping Prospects. You can end up with looking on the internet. I've got a website, jumpingprospects.co.uk. The book has 18 stable interviews in. I've gone to talk to the trainers myself, face to face. Unique, that's the way I'd describe it. I then decide which horses they've indicated are likely to be the ones that could prove successful, not only in the early parts of the season, but throughout the season. The book is broken down into each stable interview, and at the end of the interview, I give 10 or 12 horses from each interview that I think people should definitely be trying to follow. But the book has a habit of throwing up big price winners that you don't expect, so you have to really look each day at which horses are running. And the best way to do that is to put the whole index on a tracker, and then the tracker send you emails telling you when they're going to run. A lot of the older guys that I've got who buy the book, they just like sitting down in the kitchen in the evenings, looking on the internet if they've got it, or just marking off in the morning with the paper which trainers have got runners on the day, and then seeing if the runners are in the book, are featured in the book, and then they read what's being said. I do advise that on a weekend you try and put the horses into Heinz bets, or even Lucky 15s, Yanks, multiple bets in other words, because some days, on some weekends, with all the big trainers being in the book, they're all going to be Saturday horses, a lot of them. So you might end up with 20 horses on any particular Saturday. So have a look at, and you've got to decide yourself which ones you want to go and put your bets on. But that's part and parcel of the game. You know, the book's unique. I'll always say it myself, it's well written, it's well presented, it's easy to read, it's informative, and above all, it's entertaining. And you'll get quite a few stories in there. And I don't like handicappers, by the way. I've got a real dislike of handicappers. And Phil Smith, the senior handicapper, is going to retire. I know Phil well, he's a scouser himself, but I'll be glad to see him go. He can go and ride off into the sunset. But he's a good man, actually. But I've had an awful lot of run-ins with Phil. He usually walks the other way now when he sees me coming, because I want to bend his ear about a horse he's put on a rating that I don't think it should be on. But it's all good fun.
Follow our top sporting brand ambassadors, Davy Russell, Sylvester D'Souza, and Ryan Sidebottom, for their exclusive news, views, and tips on all the major events, with blogs and vlogs at starsportsbet.co.uk. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.